My name is Abayomi Ezekwe. I'm here representing the Michigan Emergency Committee Against War and Injustice. We're based in Detroit. And we just wanted to mention that we have approximately 40 minutes for this session. So I want to appeal to all the speakers to be very brief. I just wanted to say by way of introduction that Makawi also works with another organization called the Moratorium Now Coalition to stop foreclosures, evictions, and utility shutoffs. We definitely need to emphasize in these upcoming demonstrations in 2012 the relationship between the war, the wars abroad that are taking place in so many different geopolitical reasons, whether we're talking about Central Asia, the opening of a new front in North Africa, and also what is happening in the Middle East, as well as in other parts of the world. In regard to the question about Libya that the previous speaker addressed, I don't think it's clear at this point whether or not NATO has succeeded in Libya. I've been following developments there very closely over the last week. Fighting is still very tense in that area. NATO, the United States, are always very quick to claim victory. We saw that in Afghanistan 10 years ago. We saw it in Iraq 8.5 years ago, where George Bush stood up and said it was mission accomplished. And here we are 8.5 years later, and U.S. troops are still dying in Iraq. Iraqis are still dying every day in that country. So by no means should we accept the propaganda and the psychological warfare that's being leveled, not only against the people in Libya and North Africa, but also against the people here in this country as well. What is going on in Libya is clearly a crime against humanity. 20,000 sorties, over 7,500 airstrikes. We've had the deaths of thousands of people just over the last 7 days. This struggle is by no means over at all. And I'd like to introduce Bernadette Aloran from Bayan, and she will come up and make a few introductory remarks, and then we'll bring up our speakers. Bernadette.
I'm not sure if people here are familiar with my organization, Bayan. We're a Filipino alliance. We were founded in 1985, right before the fall of the former Marcos dictatorship. And we remain as the main political center for the above-ground national liberation struggle in the Philippines. And I'm with the U.S. chapter, so we work with Filipinos here in the U.S. Just so you know, there are 4 million Filipinos here in the U.S. 1/4 of them are undocumented. And so the majority of our community are immigrants. So we work very heavily with the immigrant rights issues as well. If anyone wants to know more about what we do as Bayan, you can talk to me after. I'm here also representing the International League of Struggles, which Bayan is a founder of. Some of you here may have attended the meetings of this formation. It's basically a global formation of democratic and anti-interventionist, anti-imperialist resistance movements across the globe. We currently have membership across 6 continents except for Antarctica. And this past July, we had an assembly in Manila where over 430 participants across the globe were in attendance, and it was a major victory. And just since we're talking about the war at home and the war abroad, it's really just a question of geography, really, because when I was in this international assembly, the issues we were talking about, being an anti-imperialist global formation, were about homelessness, were about, you know, minimum wage issues, immigration issues. And really, these are also our issues here in the United States. So really, when you talk about the war at home and the war abroad, it's really a question of geography, because these struggles are shared all over the world. And so, of course, if this is a global epidemic, the resistance also has to be global as well. And the ILPS is seeking greater cooperation and assistance and relationships with the anti-war movement here in the U.S., being the epicenter of U.S. imperialism. And we are also seeking the global anti-imperialist movement is really interested in all the moves and directions of the U.S. anti-war movement. And we really look forward to being here with you in Chicago next May, you know, raising our voices with you all. And we're in entire solidarity with the people of the U.S. and the people of Chicago. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Kianga Taylor. Kianga Taylor is with the Communities United Against Foreclosures and Evictions, and she's a doctoral candidate in the Department of African American Studies at Northwestern University.
Just a couple of things. People have alluded to the need for a sort of greater representation of the full Chicago organizing committee to be included in a part of the mobilizations next May, which I think everyone agrees with. And one of the sort of prime groups that organizations that have been working around some of those issues involve a network of organizations that have become active around issues of anti-eviction organizing and anti-foreclosure organizing and actually, you know, taking over properties and moving people back in. And I think that the communities where that is most salient have been have another sort of direct connection to this in terms of where the G8, where people are thinking the G8 NATO gathering will actually be held. If it's held in McCormick Place, we'll put it right on the border of Bronzeville, the historic African-American Southside community in Chicago. And I think that two parts of our messaging in terms of like how to mobilize people around the events for next May need to take up two important issues that directly affect those communities. One of which is the sort of broader understanding and argument about what the war budget and the occupation budget and really the political priorities of that other people have spoken to with G8 and NATO actually mean for targeted communities in the city of Chicago. There are more than 418,000 people in Chicago whose homes are underwater, which means their mortgages are worth more than the actual value of the houses that they're in. If you combine that with consistent and determined attack on public housing in this city, where Chicago has almost succeeded completely in privatizing its public housing stock. Over the last 10 years, according to the census, 180,000 African Americans have left Chicago, not to the suburbs, but have left the area completely. Part of that is directly related to the attacks on public housing. And if you look at where the most impact of the foreclosure crisis has been met, it has been met on the south and west side of Chicago. The war budget, the priorities of the G8 mean that this is something that should be very important to those constituencies, to those communities. And we need to be able to articulate that to people. The other reason, which I think is just as important, is the understanding that the presence of the G8 in NATO not only represents, not only has an impact on the activist community in terms of repression, in terms of heightened police presence and surveillance, but it also has a direct impact on the communities that surround the places and locations where these groups are meeting. As I said before, if it is true that they are going to meet at McCormick Place, and there really is not in the city, it's hard to imagine they would be meeting somewhere else, that this isn't an African-American community, and that the under the pretext of security and stability, et cetera, means that the presence, the greater presence of police, of the different policing agencies that will be coming to the city will really be flooding those neighborhoods and communities, in addition to the diversion of funds to be able to pay for that kind of security presence in the first place. And understanding that in the context of a Chicago Police Department that is completely off the chain and unhinged already, there have been more than 43 people shot by the Chicago Police this year, many of whom have been killed, all of whom are Black and Latino. The idea that 13,000 police will be invading the city during that time is a frightening one. And so I think that these are all the things that we need to be thinking about and talking about with representative of community groups that are not here, that are involved in the work on a community level, as a way to really try to have a representative coalition that brings together the different struggles, that brings together the different fights across the city. That's it.
Mark Clemens from the campaign to end the death penalty. Mark, you want to come on down? I'm sure everybody knows Mark here in the city of Chicago.
First of all, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and this is a great turnout. NATO and the G8 convention. First of all, we have a president and Barack Obama. He come from Chicago. We are still dealing with some of the most heinous problems within our criminal justice system. We would think that these things would change. It is time that we are the people to stand up and to understand one thing, that a silent voice cannot reach achievement. Me, myself, being a person that was victimized by one of Burge detectives, spending 28 years in prison, now here before you, the people, this is a time for wake up. It is a time for restructure. Because, let me tell you, many of the politicians today, and I have many meetings with these people, they really believe that the people are silent. They believe that due to the fact that they're looking at some of these issues and people not lift one finger to change. U.S. government, where Barack Obama and we had so much hope when he was elected. Well, today, I don't think it takes a rocket science to figure it out. The hope is gone. There's no such word within politics as change. We were the ones that were duped. Our children, our grandchildren, this world is going to be left to them. And whatever that we are willing to change, guess what? They're going to reap the benefits. But if we don't change anything for them, these same conditions are going to affect them. What are they saying? Because of the hurricane, now the gas price is going to rise back up. See, so in other words, let's not be duped. I am with this movement 100%. I'm tired. I'll be honest. I'm very tired. Within 2 years, I've done over 5,000 speaking events. I'm pretty sure many of you have seen me on the television at least once, but I'm on there almost weekly. And that is to make a change. Because let me tell you, no one in this room know what the criminal justice system face looks like other than me. I was there, and I know what these people will do. They don't care if you're innocent, and they definitely don't care if you are guilty. They're going to put you in that pot, and they're going to treat you all the same way. In closing, as we build for this movement, let's keep in mind of all of these people that are losing their households. I bet you if I ask people to stand up in this room, those that were in debt to credit card companies or those that were in foreclosure, half of this room would stand up. That is all of the need that I need to express to you, that we need change. We need to stop allowing politicians to duke us. I hang out with some of them jokers. And let me tell you, literally, that's what they are. Because they're human beings that put on the same pants or the same dresses as some of you people right here in this room. But if you kiss down to their feet, then guess what? Their esteem level needs to come back down to reality. And it is time for change, but the change must come not through voting in these well-known politicians. Barack Obama didn't do it. Emmanuel definitely is not going to do it. So we need to wake up. Let's learn from the experiences as to what we're going through, and let's become to be the family of the movements that started the civil rights movement. I'm not saying go back to those footsteps, but if we don't love each other and we don't respect each other, we'll never open our space up to be welcomed in by many different races. That's what we need to put aside, the race factor. Once we put that race factor aside, the city of Chicago and this whole globe here will be afraid of us because that's something they don't want. Thank you. And the campaign to end the death penalty will stand with this movement in May. Thank you.
Thank you. Could Melinda Power from the National Lawyers Guild please stand up? Melinda is circulating a petition against torture. She's right there. If she could just start circulating it around, she's trying to collect, gather signatures of support for the petition. Our next speakers are going to, there are two of them. I'd like to call on Nadana Carter. Nadana Carter is with STOP, or Southside Together Organizing for Power, and DeAndrea Foster from FLY, or Fearless Leading by Youth. These grassroots organizations on Chicago South Side, these are grassroots organizations on the Chicago South Side, where they have been leading the fight for a trauma center.
Hi, my name is Nadana Carter, and I'm a part of the mental health movement. STOP has been working with the mental health movement for 3 years, and in 3 years, we've made some wonderful accomplishments. One is that we stopped 2 years ago the city from closing 5 mental health clinics. The biggest challenge that we have right now is privatization of health care, mental health care, and physical health care. The National Institute of Mental Health in 2010 said that 46.4% of the United States citizens have mental illness. The largest mental health ward in the state of Illinois is part of the Illinois prison system. It's 40% mentally ill are in the prisons now. Those numbers are not decreasing, they are growing. We have people that are Vietnam vets that have been in prison for over 30 years. We have people, children that are on drugs because they've aged out of the school system, who were put on drugs, and they have mental health issues, and they'll end up in prison. Right now, the city has 12 public mental health clinics. We have 2 psychiatrists to support those clinics. People wait 4 to 6 months to see a psychiatrist, and yet they want to privatize them. Privatization is the biggest crime that we have going on now. I started talking about the prison system because people are committing crimes just so they can go to jail and get their drugs. It is that bad. You need a psychiatrist to prescribe the drugs at the city clinics. If there's no psychiatrist, then you have to find another way of getting your drugs. If you go to jail, they'll give you drugs because they want to keep you calm. It is not a system that works, but it's a system that we can fight. They're scheduled to close 7 public health clinics, physical health clinics, and privatize them. Who will pay for the privatization? The same tax dollars that paid for the public clinics. The challenge, though, is everyone will not be treated in the private clinics because they'll require insurance, and they'll require Medicaid, and if you don't have either of the two, and even with Medicaid, you may not qualify. In addition to, even with Medicaid and some insurance, there are services that you will not be able to get. It's simple as that. What we must make sure is that our constitutional rights are not being trampled on. We allow the legislators to collect dollars from us so they can support public policy and health care, housing, etc., services that we pay for. We must make sure that things are not privatized. These services are not privatized. People are scheduled to die without knowing what date, without knowing what time. When you close the clinics, health clinics, mental health clinics, you schedule people to die. To let Mary Manuel know that there is a problem that the citizens see, we're going to STOP and some other organizations, will be conducting a rally to not privatize health care. That's Monday, August 29th, 63rd and Halsted. It's the mayor's version of a budget hearing. The times are very limited. It's from 6 to 8. But we will be out there between 4:30 and 5 o'clock with a press conference. There'll be flyers, information, speech. Many, many organizations are involved in this struggle. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Hi. I'm nervous. My name is DeAndrea Foster. I'm with the organization called Fly, Fearless Leader by the Youth. Fearless Leaders by the Youth. Leaders. Basically, I'm going to talk to you guys today about our Trauma Center campaign. Last year on August 15th, one of our co-founders named Damian Turner was killed. So we've been fighting for a trauma center on the south side of Chicago. There are no trauma centers on the south side of Chicago, and I live across the street from the biggest hospital, University of Chicago. I can't get treated there. We protest, we have meetings, we done marched, we done slept on a property. They done told us they was gonna take us to jail, but we come back and we fight. It's a challenge, it hurts. We support the mental health movement. We support y'all against y'all fight against NATO and G8 because they study spending money on the war and we don't have a trauma center. They study cutting taxes from the school and we don't have a trauma center. We had an Audi Home campaign. We was going with Audi Home to make the Audi Home more sanitary for the kids that stay in there. We do a lot of stuff. We just fight anything that got a positive cause that we can start some ruckus with the mayor and Rami Manuel we go to. We just want a trauma center on the south side. We gonna support y'all. Y'all come out and support us. One voice ain't gonna be heard, but if more people come, we will get our point across, y'all points and ours. That's really all I can really say to y'all. Just come out and support. Don't give up, because we won't. Y'all older than us. Y'all set out. Y'all are role models. And when we get y'all age, we're going to have to be role models for the kids younger than us. Stay positive and keep safe.
You know, listening to these sisters speak, it just makes me very angry. Because this is not just a problem confined to Chicago. It's a national problem. Where I come from in the city of Detroit, we're having the same difficulties as people here in the city of Chicago. So as they are re-exerting their neo-colonial aims in Central Asia, in the Middle East, and Africa, they're also moving to wage war against us here by destroying our jobs, our houses, our communities, our pension funds, and our health care. And that's why we have to wage an international struggle against these evils that are being committed against us, not just here in the United States, but throughout the world. In the city of Detroit, some 20 years ago, the only public mental health facility was closed by a right-wing governor by the name of John England. This took place in 1991. And right now, the only public hospital facility in the city of Detroit, the Detroit Medical Center, has recently been privatized by the Vanguard Group that's out of Nashville, Tennessee. People who had no health insurance could go there and get operations. It had one of the most advanced trauma centers in the United States, and all of that is up for grabs right now as we speak. So this is a major struggle that we have to wage, and we have to bring all of these constituencies into our movement to struggle to show that there's a direct link between what is going on involving the G8, the so-called Gang of Eight or the Group of Eight, and of course the NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organizations, as well as the war that's being waged on working people and poor people and the oppressed here in the United States. Our next speaker, Mohammed Sukari, is a staff person for the Arab American Action Network. Can we bring Mohammed up right now? All right.
Thank you. Thanks for the introduction. Hi, everyone. What's up? Thanks for having me. So I'm a filler. Those of you who know Hatem Abudaya was supposed to be speaking, and it's probably printed on your sheet that Hatem's supposed to be here, but he got very ill last night, and so here I am in Hatem's place. So it's kind of like having Denzel Washington supposed to play a role, and then the guy from down the street fills in for him. So what I want to do is sort of just start to tell a story here. And the story begins, as a lot of you know, it doesn't begin in Chicago, but most recently last September in Chicago, when FBI agents decided to raid the homes in a coordinated attack against Palestine solidarity activists and anti-war activists across the country. And as they were paging through boxes and boxes in the homes of Joe and Stephanie, as well as Hatem and his family, in Hatem's house, the FBI agents decided to go through every single video that they had in their collection, including home videos that his wife and young daughter, Maiset, had taken on their recent trip back to Palestine. And Maiset asked two questions to her father in Arabic because she was too shy to say them out loud to the FBI agents. And the first question had to do with the videos. And she turns to her father and said, Baba, what do they want with my Disney videos? Why are they paging through essentially all of these videos of princesses and all of these other things? And the second question is, she said, in Arabic, she said, Baba, lesh huma biyakhdu al-kutub fil arabi wa huma biqra'ush al-arabi. And which translates to, Baba, why are they taking Arabic books when none of them know how to speak Arabic? And this is from a five-year-old. And so, of course, Hatem then proceeded to ask Maiset to ask the agents that, but she was a little too shy and intimidated. So what I want to talk about specifically now is the repression of the Palestine Solidarity Movement, and specifically Palestinians, and then in the United States, as well as Muslims. They aren't the same thing. It's very important that we make a distinction, but for the sake of time, I'm going to lump those two things together. The repression of the Palestinian Solidarity Movement is not new in this country. It's not a post-9/11 thing. And a lot of people, we sort of fall into that trap. Did it speed up? Did it become more visible? Yes. But the oppression of the Palestine Solidarity Movement and the repression against them has been going on for a very long time. One of the most famous cases is the LA 8, which was seven Palestinians and, I believe, a Nigerian woman who was married to one of the Palestinians. And, I'm sorry? Kenyan. Sorry, excuse me. And she was married to one of the activists, and they essentially were they tried to deport them for their political activity under a law that was passed under Ronald Reagan that essentially made it illegal to be part of a communist organization, for lack of a better way of summing it up. And they were all working on behalf of the PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which at the time was not on the State Department's list of terrorist organizations. So all of their activities were perfectly lawful and legal. And what happened is a 20-year battle ensued where the United States government was trying to lock them up and kick them out of this country simply because they were fighting and standing in solidarity with the people back home who were fighting for national liberation in Palestine. This case just recently ended, recently as in 2006, where these men and women were finally able to say, I'm not going to be deported from this country. This case started in the 1980s. So that's the first case. Then these sorts of cases continue and speed up and become more prominent after 9/11. Very, very famously, as a lot of you may know, Dr. Sami Alarian in Florida, who's a professor who is, to my knowledge, still going through a very long process, spent over 2,000 days in prison, much of which was in solitary confinement, having never been found guilty of any charge. And so to wrap up, I got the little wrap-up thing here. And so to wrap up, what we're talking about here is as repression happens in sort of our homelands, whether I really want to give props to Alejandro, who spoke before me, about the Puerto Rican national liberation struggle, or the Filipino national liberation struggle, or the Palestinian national liberation struggle, and the list goes on and on and on and on. And as the repression increases in those countries, these same forces, and that's important to know, the same forces that are involved in repressing those national liberation struggles will repress the solidarity activities here. The FBI is using tools like the grand jury to lock people away on essentially secret trials. And they use things like bringing in Mossad agents, like they did in the case of Muhammad Ashgar and Abdul Halim Ashgar and Muhammad Saleh in Chicago, where they used Mossad agents who the defendants were not even allowed to see or be in the same room while they were giving testimony in court. And they used them to lock these people away on trumped up charges. Mohammed Salah was never found guilty of a terrorism charge. Neither was Abdul Halim Eshkar. Abdul Halim Eshkar was found guilty of not cooperating with a federal grand jury and given, if I believe I'm correct, 11 years in prison for not cooperating with a federal grand jury, which was unheard of at the time. And this is right here in our wonderful town of Chicago. And so to wrap it up, and I'm sorry, I know I got the wrap up thing a while ago. Again, as we need to sort of have a broad gaze where what I'm arguing for is we need to connect the international with the national and the local specifically. And let's remember that our brothers and sisters that are struggling for national liberation in their own home countries are facing repression by the same and similar forces that are oppressing us here in the United States. So let's make to borrow the RNC term, I think they called themselves the RNC Welcoming Committee in Minnesota. So hopefully we can make a NATO G8 Welcoming Committee and retirement and get the hell out of our world committee as well.
Our next speaker is Tracy Malm. Tracy Malm is a member of the Students for a Democratic Society at the University of Minnesota. And she was one of those raided and subpoenaed by the FBI. Tracy Malm.
My speech got a lot shorter since a lot of people have already said a lot of my stuff. There are a total of 7 homes that were raided on September 24th, one of which was the Anti-War Committee office. What a surprise. Meredith Abbey from the Anti-War Committee spoke first, this morning. This investigation started around the RNC, and they brought in a spy. Now, we know that this isn't about the RNC. It's about our right to speak out and our ability to speak in support of national liberation struggles around the world and to connect that to what's happening here. The fact is, there is a direct link between my ability to go to school and our wars that we're doing abroad or the money that we're giving to Israel every day. And I think, to me, the really important part is, the anti-war movement, and thankfully most of you have rallied around us. And I think that that's one of the things that's really important. We can't choose, we can't fight without, at a very basic level, defending our right to fight, defending our right to speak out. And so it's very important that people understand what's happening to us is a direct attack against the ability to continue to organize against the G8 and NATO protests that are happening. So I guess, I'm just gonna get right to the point. Like, just because they can do this to us, does that mean that we should stop?
No.
Does it mean that we should let it scare you?
No.
I mean, there's no doubt it's scary. Yeah. But if that's the lesson that we learn from this, then we should all go home. And the reality is there are 23 of us who have chosen to take this stance of not speaking to a grand jury. Thank you. And we do that because we know we're on the side of right. Together, we need to stand together on the side of right. The real criminals will be meeting with the G8 and with NATO. So if we stand down now, we'll be letting them win, but we can't do that. And so I ask that everyone use our, learn from the example that we're living through right now and use that as an example of you need to step it up because they're fighting back, but we can't stop fighting because they're trying to scare us.
The crisis that we face right now in the city of Detroit and the city of Chicago and so many other cities is very, very grave at this point. We're being told that the school teachers, the civil servants, the janitors, and the clerical workers are responsible for the current economic crisis that we're facing here in this country, that our salaries are too high, that our health care programs are too lucrative, that our pension funds are too expensive. These are all lies that we hear propagandized against us on a daily basis through the media, through the bankers, and also through many of the politicians. So we think it's very, very important at this time that we bring up our next speaker, Alex Hahn, who is Vice President of the Healthcare Illinois, Indiana, a local of the Service Employees International Union. He's speaking today for Stand Up Chicago, which rallied thousands of workers this summer protesting bank bailouts and tax cuts for the wealthy and demanding jobs and funding for schools. Let's have a warm welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to try to make this short. I know that people want to get to breakouts and other discussions. My name is Alex Hahn. I am a vice president of SEIU Healthcare Illinois in Indiana and also a coordinator of Stand Up Chicago. which is a coalition of unions and community groups from across the city that have been working together in a relatively loose fashion, focused on specifically economic issues, jobs, housing, and the starvation of our schools and public services over the last several months. I know there was a brother from Montreal, I think, earlier during the discussion that mentioned something about the Central Labor Councils being a big center of action for Canada. And I wish we could say the same thing here in the States in general, but we're working on it. We're working on it. So Stand Up Chicago kicked off earlier this year. We did community canvasses around the city on the south side, on the west side, and the northwest side to talk to people about the economic issues that are facing them, and particularly to talk about the kind of corporations and the banks that are pulling the political strings, that are making those decisions for our communities, for our neighborhoods, and for our workplaces. You know, it came together on June 14th. We had 5,000 people downtown at rush hour to confront the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce's CFO Executive Summit down at the Hyatt Regency at Michigan and Wacker, and have been continuing work on campaigns around the city, around foreclosures and housing and bank issues, around different issues of education, particularly jobs. You know, going forward, we do have a few events coming up. On Labor Day, September 5th, I know there was a yellow flyer out on the table, the only yellow flyer for our Labor Day march and rally, where we'll be meeting at Grant Park at 11 a.m. I think it says on the flyer there's free Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Does it say that, Jay? Yes? Okay. And Ben and Jerry will actually be there. Yeah, I know. This is how you get the kind of big union guys to sign on to something. Free ice cream works well, shockingly well. There's going to be a negotiation for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which has the potential to be a new NAFTA for the Pacific Rim. You know, there will be delegates for these negotiations from countries around the Pacific Rim. They actually moved their negotiation from San Francisco, where it was originally planned, which happens to be on the Pacific Ocean, to Chicago about a month ago. And normally they don't move these big trade negotiations. Like, it's not something you just do, well, oh, you know, San Francisco, that sounds boring. We're going to go to Chicago instead. They were terrified of the level of activity that was potentially going to happen in San Francisco. And fortunately for them, Chicago has a new mayor, Rahm Emanuel. Most of you have probably heard of him. Who was instrumental in the first NAFTA. And so they have come into Rahm Emanuel's loving arms for protection. So we're going to try to show them that while we may not be the Bay Area, we can still make some noise in Chicago. We're also going to be building up with community groups from around the city and around the country for a week of action in October, from October 9th to 15th. You know, one of the things that I just wanted to make sure to say in the wrap-up is that we've been having discussions both inside SEIU and across the labor movement in Chicago about what our appropriate response is to the G8 and NATO. It's something that even though a lot of union leadership might want to, you know, kind of try to go along and get along, it's something that's too big for us to ignore. And so there's definitely an interest, and through Stand Up Chicago, we're going to be working to bring together unions to have a labor response for what is the Chicago labor movement and what is the national labor movement going to do. And we've got Susan Hurley here too from Jobs with Justice Chicago, you know, to kind of show we're serious about this. And both in SEIU, you know, through our partners in Jobs with Justice and in different labor coalitions, that we are going to have a labor response, that we want to be able to work together in coordination with everybody in this room and all of the other forces that are gathering to be able to actually send a message next May. So thanks.
With all the speakers, this more enforces the need to link our local struggles to the global struggle against war and intervention and the neoliberal agenda. And hopefully we can all make this happen between now and May and really confront you know, these colonial powers, these neocolonial powers, with the massive force of people's resistance. Thank you very much.